This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So none of the characters in this film are like making jokes, but they're all very funny on their own. Is that the sort of thing, sort of humor that appeals to you?
I think it is. I think humor that comes from somewhere real and sometimes somewhere quite dark is often the funniest to me.
So how do you make it funny when you're supposed to act normal?
Good question. I tell you what, we had the most amazing script to work with, so I don't think it was a matter of trying to construct something. It was all there on the page, and it was so clear and quite obvious. The tone of it was quite obvious to me, so it was just a matter of, you know, making it real and honouring Michael Arndt's genius. That's the guy who wrote it.
Yeah.
So you were talking about this film last time I met you. What was it that appealed to you? Because it's the directors haven't had a lot of experience. What made you just instinctively know that this was going to be good?
I think that's it. It's instinct. It comes from somewhere else. It kind of bypasses your brain and interacts with some other part of you that is compelled to be a part of it. It was brilliantly written, and I think the tone of it is so beautiful, the way it oscillates between being hysterically funny and then quite poignant and moving and just seemed very real to me and relative and original in this time of plagiarism and rehashing bad movies over and over to make money that's never going to happen. You know, it's such a breath of fresh air that something like this could find its voice and make its way. And hopefully it'll help other directors or other filmmakers, because it'll show people that it's worth allowing an individual voice and an independent voice to come shining on through. Shut up!
This is a constant battle, I think, that we... there's always a film, like, every year or every other year that's independent, and then, like this.
Mm.
And then you're always still fighting
that
battle.
I'm just going to see what's going on here.
It's actually distracting. Can we have extra time, then?
And then you're always still fighting that battle.
Who's making all
those searchlight girls?
So, I guess my question is, going on is...
Sorry,
that,
yeah.
That's all good. How did you get involved with the script? Could you tell us how it all came to you?
It was sent to me out of the blue. My agent said, it's you know, this movie's an offer. He really loved it, and I was shooting The Night Listener at the time, which has a completely different tone, and I just... It's okay. It's all right. I just inhaled it. It was so easy to read and digest, and I loved every moment of it. And the very next day, I spoke on the phone with John Vale, the directors, and as soon as I could get to LA, I did. And I think in anyone else's hands, it could have been some other Hollywood nightmare version of this movie, but when I met them, it was very clear that we were kind of on the same page in terms of how we saw it.
Did they know back then the whole colour scheme?
They knew everything. They'd been living with this for years. They knew it shot for shot and every single moment. Not to say that they weren't willing to... what's the word? Help me.
Compromise?
No, not compromise.
Discuss.
That's all they wanted to do. But no, yeah, we did that too. What's the word? It's when people work together.
Collaborate.
Yeah, thank you. God. Sorry, I've been talking all day.
How did you relate to the little girl, Olive, and then the boy, Dwayne? I mean, there were two different children completely.
Yeah, but we're all different human beings, and we're all part of that cast and all part of that family, and just the same, you know, we all kind of treated each other there was a respect and an admiration for each other, and they were very incredibly professional and obviously very talented. And
but you in the film are their mother, and there was like exasperated times, like when Dwayne wouldn't go and you knew you had to be at the pageant.
Right.
How do you relate to something as a mother to these kind of characters?
How did I, or did the mother?
The mother.
Well, as you see in the film, you know, I think that Cheryl's a really selfless person. She's incredibly strong, but all she's done is pretty much give up everything in order to give life to these kids. She would die for them, and she encourages them to be the best versions of themselves that they can possibly be. She really encourages individuality and wants them to unlike their father, who puts a lot of pressure and expects all of these unrealistic kind of ideals to come blossoming through. she has a huge amount of... she just is a very accepting person, I think.
You're such a brilliant actress, and I love everything you've been in. I just wondered where this comes from. Did you dream of acting as a child, or, you know, do you think it's natural to do with, like, natural talent or your ability?
Yeah, I don't think you can learn how to act. I think you just know how to do it. And so with Abby, and who was 8 years old when we made this, it's not something I think that you can teach, or she just has an innate ability.
So was it a dream when you were little?
My dad says I just came out kind of singing and dancing and doing it anyway. And I have always been a bit of an extroverted kind of performer, lots of singing and dancing and just being generally loud when I was younger. And then when I was a teenager, I just felt like when I found it, it just felt like this is it, and I just all happened quite naturally. I guess it was a dream, but it was kind of realised quite quickly, you know.
And was there a defining moment once you were acting professionally, where you thought, because you told me that fame got too much at one point, and you were kind of exhausted by it. But was there a defining moment where you realised that you kept made it, or were famous, or recognised?
No, I think if you think you've gotten to a point like that, it's probably time to pack it up and go home. I mean, life is an ongoing lesson and a journey that's, you know, doesn't really end. So I wouldn't want to ever land at some plateau and think that I've arrived somewhere. It's continuous.
And what about the moment when you realised that you were being recognised, like literally, as an actress and on the street?
I thought Muriel's Wedding came out first in Australia, and I was in New York soon after that, and people stopped me on the street there, and that was kind of odd to think, wow, on the other side of the planet, someone's actually aware of who I am. But people are mostly quite respectful and, you know, say nice things, so it's not a bad thing. I do what I do because I enjoy it, and it's all about the work for me. I don't really adhere to or perpetuate the other stuff that goes with it. I have a very normal, quiet life, and I live in Australia, and I don't turn up to the opening of a paper bag. So if people like my work and that perpetuates more work, then that's really all I can ask for.
What was the transition like from not being in the business at all to those first 2 or 3 film jobs?
It was really exciting. I mean, I started doing musicals at school, and then I went to a youth theatre group where I did some more musicals and did some, you know, dramatic plays. And I did my first film when I was 17, and it just felt like an extension of that fun. Except all of a sudden I was able to buy things because they were paying me for doing it. Really.
How did it smell in that van by the end of the film?
Oh, God. You can only imagine.
was it uncomfortable, you know, shooting scenes repeatedly? Did they break them up to...
No, all of the car scenes were kind of done in sequence because that was our moving location, you know. It was... fine, you know, we had barely any air conditioning. Some scenes were able to open the windows, they had to be closed. But I think anywhere between action and cut, you'd find most of us pretty focused on what we were doing anyway. And in between takes, you could open the windows and look at the beautiful countryside. So we all just really appreciate this script so much that we were pretty happy to be there, even though the elements were overwhelming sometimes.
You said a couple of times, you said it was easier eating than just, you just said everybody really appreciated it, the script. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what is it? What does this story tell us, first about family, and then second, about winners and losers?
Well, I guess the notion of being a winner is kind of this hot air. Mm-hmm. and that... it's okay to embrace the chaos that is you, and that most ideals of perfection and achievement are kind of unrealistic. And I think Val puts it really in this thing here. I read it earlier. They wanted to make a film not about family values, but the value of family. Mm-hmm. And all of these people are yearning to connect with each other. And this unexpected journey where they're all physically forced into a hot tin can changes everything. They're able to see each other more clearly for the first time in a long time, and they literally fall in love with each other again. And
what's the relationship with your own family like? And are you kind of closer to your mum or your dad or one or the other? Or I know you've got brothers, are you close to them?
We're all close. There's no kind of favouritism, really. Sorry, I was just in the middle.
Oh, sorry,
of
sorry.
That's
all
right. Shit, I can't remember where I was.
That's all right.
Sorry.
You were talking about literally falling. You said they all all fall in love with each other.
Yeah, I think. They'd all been yearning for that and kind of spinning in their own universes, and it happened unexpectedly, even though specifically my character is always trying to make sure everyone's happy. And it happened kind of naturally on that trip when they spent time together, and some of it was quite simple and some of it was quite extraordinary. And I think when you feel like you're accepted and part of a community, no matter how big or small it is, for them it's this small family unit, that kind of frees you up. And so by the end of the film, you're seeing these people who've all been, funny, but kind of lonely and sad and feeling small and frustrated in their own worlds, uniting, and that frees them in a way, and they seem to... Just embracing the reality of their lives.
Now, are you from Australia?
Yes. I'm also jet lagged because I flew here from there days ago.
So you still live there then?
Yeah, I do live. I live in Sydney, yes.
Are you happiest there, do you think?
Oh, I'm pretty happy most places. I think the fact that I now, for quite a few years, have had somewhere really permanent allows me to enjoy wherever I am, because I know I'm going to return there, you know.
Robin said that you received a letter during the shoot from that Armistad said was probably from the woman you played. Is that true?
Well, I did receive a letter. There's no real confirmation that it's from her, although both Terry and Armistead, who had this kind of personal experience with this woman, said it had all the, you know, the traits and the markings of what she would do. She'd kind of drop little hints, you know, kind of pointing an arrow to the fact that it may be from her. But there was no real... I don't know who it was from, really.
But it didn't creep you out, or there wasn't anything unsettling?
The idea that it might have been was slightly unsettling. But, you know, I don't know if it was, for sure.
What's been the biggest challenge, would you say, so far in your life? Is it the
jet lag?
Is it been music or acting or any one film?
Yeah, herbs for that.
I've been taking them, babe. I'm shoving them down my neck. what was the question?
Challenge. What the biggest, you know, has there been a kind of biggest challenge that you've faced in either, you know, work or anything in music, acting, anything? What do you find challenging?
What I find challenging is reading a story and making it come to life. That's why I do what I do. It's exciting when you get it right. I guess it's all kind of, I don't know, I've been doing it for a really long time now, so sometimes I feel like I could do it standing on my head. And I don't mean that in an egotistical way, it's just that we've all got to create new challenges for ourselves to stay awake. But
do you have children of your own?
No.
But you say you're going to have them soon?
Yeah.
Could you
talk about some of your upcoming projects that are not related to Little Miss Sunshine?
I can. What do I have coming out? There's an Australian film called Like Minds, where I play a forensic psychologist who's trying to figure out which psychotic teenage boy kind of killed these people. That's quite a dark thriller also. And I really only have a small part. This young English guy called Eddie Redmond is pretty much the star of that, and he's a brilliant young actor. What else is coming out? So Nightless is coming out. We've talked a little bit about
it. You can talk about stuff you're doing right now that's far away.
I just shot a film called Tsunami. It's an HBO BBC co-production about the aftermath of the tsunami and what the effect was of the waves hitting in Thailand. And I play a Christian missionary who's been living in Thailand for 11 years, and she's running an education program working with young kids in the local fishing villages. And
based on something true, or is it?
Well, the tsunami did happen.
I know.
There are several strands within the story, and the woman who wrote it did go and speak to a lot of the survivors. So I think quite a few of the characters and what they lose and how they cope with it or don't cope with it are inspired by the people that she spoke to, and it really humanizes something which, I don't know, when it's on the news or television, you know. That particularly was very devastating to a lot of people, but it kind of fades, and I think the people who went through it are still going through it, just dealing with that such great loss, you know, unexpected and out of control, and you realise how small we are when nature just does that, you know. So it's not some big disaster movie. It's really about how humans cope with such... or don't cope.
Have you ever been through any kind of, trauma or desperation yourself? No.
And it was amazing. I loved Thailand. It's such a beautiful place, and the Thai people are so gracious and generous and just beautiful. And I was there for a couple of months. The shoot, I think, was three months.
On the beaches that were really hard hit?
One of them, yes, in Khao Lak.
Does it still look...
Some of it actually does, yeah. A lot of it's in reconstruction, and it pretty much just looks like a construction site. There was one hotel where we shot, and literally the fan hanging from the ceiling was still all buckled up in one direction where the wave had kind of pushed it, and it just hadn't been addressed yet at all. So I've shot that.
HBO is very good at humanizing situations without... pushing the special effects.
Yeah, without sensationalizing it. Yeah, I really...
It's not NBC.
No. I appreciate and support HBO. Earlier this year, I did a film with a woman called Karen Moncrief called Dead Girl, which is like five vignettes about different groups of people all kind of somehow related to this dead girl.
At least you have nothing going on.
I'm about to do three movies before the end of the year. I'm doing a film called Evening. I'm doing a film with Alan Ball that is yet to be titled. And I'm doing a film in Australia called Hey, Hey, It's Esther Blueberger.
Could you talk about this Alan Ball project?
Yeah. It's about the objectification of women and how images are just thrown at us day in and day out and how people are affected by them and how it becomes difficult to live an authentic kind of life. And it's about a 13-year-old girl who's quite... Well, she's 13, so she's discovering her sexuality and she's so influenced by everything around her. And it's quite a confronting, intense story, actually. And I play a very pregnant neighbour who kind of creates a safe place for her to come in. And she's quite astute and progressive for this neighbourhood and she's able to, you know, air her thoughts, whatever, with this woman.
What's your humour in something like that? Like, Ball is great at doing with American Beauty and 6 Feet Under.
I think it has the same tone, yeah. All of a sudden. And also in October in Australia, I've got a record coming out, so there's that too. It's really, I'm glad I had 6 months off at the end of last year, because this year is just, which is why I can't talk.
Do you like them equally, acting and music?
Yeah, they're different, and they're, but they come from the same place, so there are similarities.
How much time do you spend on this side of the ocean?
Quite a bit, actually. I work a lot in America, and it's probably half a year. It all happens in small chunks, though.
So you have any animals and things at home that don't recognize you when you get there?
I know, it's devastating. I have a beautiful little dog, a little beagle, and it just kills me every time I have to go away. When I was just in Thailand, as I said, for 2 months, and when I got home, I can't tell whether she remembered me or not, but she's such a friendly dog. It doesn't matter.
She didn't know whether to lick you or bite you, huh?
Oh, no, she's not like that. She's got a big personality. She's so sweet and playful and, yeah.
What you spend a lot of money on?
Sorry?
What you spend a lot of money on? Because you talked about...
My house.
Your house. Mm.
Okay. What special is it? Just fantastic.
Yeah. I love it. We love it. It's home. Should be special and fantastic.
Do you shop a lot, or is it just that big thing? You know, big things that mean a lot to you, or are you a big shopper?
I'm not a big shopper. In Thailand, I got a bit of palm tree fever and had to go out for a day and get giddy with it. But it's not really, you know, a priority.
What's a guilty pleasure? Any guilty pleasures that you have?
Red wine. Okay, see ya.
Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Bye.